when that slowly I got used to it or whatever, that emptiness really started to creep in. It was like, you know, what am I doing? You know, like baseball, like what happened? Like you start regretting, like, oh, why did I do it then or whatever? And I just got tired of that.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's interview series from Phenom to the Farm, where we're talking to former professional baseball players to reminisce about their playing days and what they learned in their journey from amateur ball to the professional ranks. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today, we're joined by former Giants farmhand, content creator, and self-proclaimed king of JUCO, Eric Sim. If you're familiar with Eric Sim and his content, this probably won't be a surprise to you, but if you're unfamiliar with Eric, I'm warning you right now, this might not be the episode to listen to with kids in the car. Eric loves to swear. I almost admire that he made it about a minute and a half without letting something go. So again, this podcast is explicit because of language, but I have to say this is truly one of my favorite episodes. Eric was very candid about his unique baseball journey. He talks about immigrating from South Korea to Canada as a child and adjusting to a different baseball culture while not being able to speak the same language as the other kids. Obviously, we talk JUCO and why he champions JUCO baseball. Eric goes into the jump to D1, what's it like opening your career against the number one team in the country, and then goes into his time as a non-prospect minor leaguer and how that really ended up kind of sucking the joy out of baseball for him. What I find really interesting and genuine about Eric is how he brought baseball back into his life after he was done playing. If you check out his content, you know this, but Eric plays and trains for baseball just for fun. I equate it to how some people play golf. He lives his days trying to swing faster and throw harder and having a lot more fun doing it than when he was playing professionally. Really interesting look at baseball beyond the organized game from Eric. Fun episode. Hope everyone enjoys it. Just again, please don't listen with small children in the car. Episodes from Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and go check out past interviews. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts if you are enjoying the show. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We're about to get into the college baseball postseason, and the prospect hot sheet is back. Minor league baseball is back. It's just a great time to be subscribed to Baseball America. For future guest info of this podcast, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Bandujo. But for now, let's talk to Eric Sim. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, he was a 27th round pick by the Giants in 2010 out of USF. He is the king of JUCO, Eric Sim. Eric, thanks so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Of course. Eric, before we get going, you do all the content in the world. Tell the listeners where they can find you on social media, where they can check out what you've been up to.
If you guys want, you guys can freaking find me. You'll find a way. But the tag is King of JUCO on Twitter. And then I do Instagram and all that stuff at esim3400. I also make YouTube videos. I'm a YouTuber now, so... you can search me at Eric Sim as well.
And it is a lot of baseball content, a lot of just throwing content in general, throwing baseballs, throwing large pieces of fruit.
That's right.
a bunch of stuff. Okay, so let's take it back to pre-King of JUCO. You're born in South Korea. Right. Something I think the pandemic taught us is that South Korea has an awesome culture around baseball and having fun with baseball. It's much like seemingly every other nation that isn't the USA, apparently.
Yeah.
What was baseball like for you growing up in South Korea before you and your family moved to Canada?
Again, the culture is different. And the way you play and the way you grow up playing is a hell of a lot different than what people are used to here. For example, over there, I grew up playing, Little League baseball and all that shit. And, you get beat up, man. It's hard for me to say it. You literally fucking get beat up sometimes. And it happens every day, really. So whenever you make a mistake or whatever, let's say we're taking infield, right? And then a left fielder makes a mistake. Coach will call him over. You got to run all the way, sprint from left field to the coach. And he, you get in the push-up position, and then he literally just beats the shit out of you with a fungo a couple of times, and you go back to your position. And then again, it sounds crazy to everyone listening, I'm sure, but for me, it was the norm, you know. And over there, a different culture. Coaches were treated like gods and stuff like that. And that's just how it was. And I didn't even go to school, man. It was fucking insane. If you're playing baseball or any type of sports, really, if you take it serious over there, you really devote your entire day, every single day for that and nothing else. So I'll literally show up to school, do an attendance check, and start practicing. You know, we have high school teams and middle league teams, and you literally go start practicing and you practice all day type stuff. So that's what I grew up doing.
So, and how old were you when you moved to Canada?
I moved when I was 13. So I grew up playing in South Korea from my age of 8. That's when I started playing, until age of 13.
And you didn't speak any English when you moved, right?
No, I spoke zero. Like I said, I didn't fucking go to school. So it's like I didn't learn anything, you know, like I was just a dumb kid. And then like, all I knew was hi and bye and yes and no, that's basically all I knew. And when I moved to Canada, I moved to Canada when I was 13, and that was obviously a huge culture change. And that's something I had to get used to.
So with the Canadian baseball culture, because I mean, I'm sure there were a million other cultural things you had to adjust to and assimilate with Canadian baseball culture, how did that blend with how you had grown up playing already in South Korea? Like, did you have to make a lot of adjustments with how you went about the game, how you enjoyed the game, stuff like that? How did you fit in with what you brought?
Yeah, again, in Korea, with that culture like that, and it's kind of hard to enjoy the sport, you know, like, obviously, like, I started playing, like, I loved it and all that. But it's because it gets so strict and serious right away, it was tough. It was tough for me to actually enjoy the sport. But again, like, the culture, and everyone does it. It's not like you're the only one. Like, all the other kids are going through the same shit, so you kind of have to deal with it. And then when I moved to Canada, I was just like, holy shit, you know, like, we're doing like an hour and a half practice, and coaches are giving you high five. I still remember that forever. I'm going to remember this forever. I remember my first practice in Canada. I didn't speak any English, but my mom somehow got me into a local baseball team, and we practiced for like an hour, if that. Mostly fucking around, you know, and then I still remember I did something like a random, like, a routine thing to me at the time, and he's like, good job, and give me a high five. I was like, what the fuck just happened? You know, just like, why is he so happy that I just made this routine play? You know, I had to make this in Korea, you know, like, if I don't make it, like, I'm getting beat up, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it's like a huge culture shock to me, and obviously I think that's when I started loving the sport, I guess, and I enjoyed it.
It's a little more fun when the people around you are having fun as well.
Exactly.
So with when you get into high school, what is Canadian high school baseball culture like? And like, here, like, I grew up in Texas, and then there's the whole travel ball culture in Texas high school sports, which right. Everyone just cares way too much about everything. What is the high school baseball culture in Canada? And then what are you and your high school teammates? Are you talking, you know, are you getting into high school talking about, oh, I want to go play in college, I want to do this stuff? Or is it like, this is just this thing we do for fun sometimes?
Yeah, it's a little bit different than travel ball and stuff like that here. Again, it gets pretty hectic over here, and I've heard some stories and stuff like that. But over there, like, again, this is back in the day too. This was 15 years ago. So we didn't have a whole lot of, we still don't have high school baseball teams in Canada. We have club teams, right? So because every high school, like over here, like, you have what, like, tens of 100 kids playing baseball. But literally at my high school in Canada back then, we had 3 kids playing baseball, you know? So it's just like, you can't have a high school baseball team. It was more of a club baseball team, like, you represent the city or whatever. So I was from a small city called Abbotsford, and I'll play for the team Abbotsford Cardinals, which was like the team, it's kind of like a travel ball, but not really. It's more like it's like a local high school league, but it's like you're playing for under the team or like a city's umbrella or whatever, just because there aren't too many kids playing baseball. And it has grown a lot, I've heard, but again, it's still nothing compared to in the States. And again, there's pros and cons to that, right? So if you want to be good at baseball, like, you should probably challenge yourself in the States. That's when I decided to go to college in the States. It was because I want to see how far I could make it, you know. And there's also the cons that, like you said, travel balls and all that gong show that's going on, and that's something like I didn't have to deal with, you know what I'm saying? So
with the kind of baseball culture in Canada, for what it is in these club teams, what made you decide you wanted to keep playing baseball after high school?
I was good at it, and again, I was enjoying it a little more so than when I played in Korea. You know, I enjoyed playing baseball. I was good at it. I wouldn't say like I like loved the sport per se, but it just, I enjoyed playing it. I was good at it, and I wanted to see how far I could make it. And my family wasn't a whole lot of like wealthy or anything like that at the time. Still don't. So it's just like, well, you know, I got to kind of make my own way, you know, like make my own path, you know? And so instead of going to a college in Canada, I'm paying, and there's no athletic scholarship in Canada. So the only thing I could get was academic scholarships. And then I wasn't really about that. So I decided to go down south, and really, I didn't really get any offers other than a school called Kobe Community College, which is a JUCO in Kansas. And that's the only school that offered me. And then I signed with them right away, and I started my journey in the States.
So how did they find you? Kansas and Canada, not close to my
Right, knowledge. Right, of course. So funny story. Our school actually had like 14 Canadians on our team just because our assistant coach was from Canada, and he had a bunch of connections over here. And his actually brother saw me playing in like a little small tournament or whatever in Canada. And then he saw me playing. Apparently, he reached out to him. And then he drove from Kansas to watch me play. But game was like 30-hour drive. Came up to watch me play. I remember because he showed up with his dog. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, this college recruiting coach showing up with his dog. I'm like, what? What is happening? And then he offered me full ride right away. And then I signed. And I became a Kobe Community College Trojan.
How much did you know about junior college baseball before you got down there, or college in general?
Man, I didn't know shit. Like for now, for the guys in Canada and kids growing up, like they know guys, like they've seen guys like me or other people that's from there that went down south and then had success or whatever, you know. And there's cases like that. When I was growing, this is 10-15 years ago, so this is a long time ago, there's no one, you know, like not many people went down south, you know. Baseball is still very small in Canada, so you basically just like try everything on your own and try to figure it out, I guess, you know. And funny story, because I didn't know shit, like I didn't know what to do, and even until I was going to like college, my English wasn't all that fluent. Like I've only moved there when I was 13, and I spoke English for about 4 or 5 years, right? So it's not very fluent. And I still remember my first day going to Kobe Community College. I never flown before, other than coming to Canada from Korea. But like this was like on my own, you know, like no parents or nothing, you know. So I go over there. One of the dudes picked me up or whatever. And I get set up at this piece of shit, you know, dorm, you know, and I'm in there, man. I was very, very shy, and I was scared. Like, I was so scared. Like for 2 days, I still remember I didn't eat anything for 2 days, dude. Like it was like, cause I didn't know where to go. Like I was like, in a really, really small town in Kansas, fucking cafeteria. I couldn't find it. And I was too scared to ask. And like, for literally 2 days, I starved myself. And at some point, And I had to like fucking get food, like I'm gonna die. And then one of my roommates actually, that's when he moved in, and then like I got into the whole, you know, learning about the schools and shit like that. But yeah, man, it was a crazy experience. Small town called Kobe, Kansas, like I don't know, town of like maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people, small JUCO, and that's where I spent my 2 years.
It's funny hearing like you're talking about Kansas is going down south, and that when I was in college, we had a team in our conference in Wichita, right. And it was always the northernmost we would go each year, and it was always the coldest weekend. But
yeah,
I guess the weather might have been a perk, going a little farther south to Kansas. So
fuck that, man. BC was nice. I'm from BC, like Vancouver is. No, I mean, not bad. Like, I mean, of course it gets cold, but it's like kind of like Seattle. It rains a lot, you know?
I will say the mutual friend you and I have said that the right. winter in Odessa, Texas was worse than the winter in Vancouver.
Dude, man, Kansas is the worst winter I've ever spent in my fucking life. Man, it's not even fucking close, because I don't know if people know this. The windshield over there, it's fucking brutal, man. The wind is literally like 30, 40 miles an hour. Like, it's incredible. I can't even explain it. And when it's cold, man, you're aching. Your body aches because you're just like so cold. Like I've never felt anything like that before, man. In Korea, like I'm from a town called Busan, and it's more like south. So it's by the water and stuff like that. So it's a little bit warmer. Again, BC, Vancouver, it gets a little bit cold, but not like it maybe snows like once or twice a year type shit. I go to fucking Kansas, like, I'm in the snow, like, shoveling snow out of the fucking JUCO field, and I'm, like, dying, you know, like, it's so cold, and the wind is just, like, howling, and it's just, like, shivering cold, and I'm just like, man, dude, the winter in Kansas is not something I'm willing to experience again. Fuck that noise.
I had the coldest baseball game of my life was in Wichita, Kansas. The first, I will say, is the only time ever playing baseball that I did not want to be put into the game. I just wanted to. I just wanted to sit in the dugout by the heater they had given us. And
yep, it's sore.
Yeah, not great. But so you get into JUCO ball, and JUCO, you guys hit it hard in the fall. Lot of practice. Right. When you get down into JUCO and you're playing with guys who have been playing, you know, playing American baseball since they were, you know, seven and playing on all these travel teams and all that stuff. How did you start stacking up? Like, how did you acclimate yourself to that? And how did you feel like you were hanging in there in that kind of environment?
Yeah, again, one of the biggest adjustments I had to make was from going from high school to JUCO. And I still say that. I've said that to multiple other podcasts too. And it was a huge adjustment for me because, and again, like, I was decent in high school, you know, but in Canada, like, I don't know, like, but we don't, that's all I see. That's all I see. And that's all I know. And I see that competition, and I thought I was good, and I got a full ride, obviously. So I'm like, all right, well, I must be pretty good, you know? And I go there. I still remember my first fall ball practice. Like, back then, like, lifting wasn't a big deal. Like, 15 years ago, lifting was considered bad and all that shit. And so I never lifted or anything like that in high school. I literally did not lift in high school. And I go over there, like, I'm just like a chubby kid, and everyone's jacked. I was like, what the hell is going on? These dudes have been, like, lifting, you know, like, you have, like, mandatory weights and shit like that. And I've never seen anything like that, you know? I go over there, like, these dudes are fucking monstrous. And we got some, like, country boys, obviously, we're in Kansas, right? So we got some big-ass country dudes. I'm like, holy fuck. It was, like, a huge kick in the ass, really, for me. And the first fall ball practice, man, I could barely hit it out in the infield, man. And all these dudes are hitting tanks. I'm like, dude, I better figure it the fuck out or I'm going to get my scholarship taken away. My ass is going home, you know, like, so. And from then on, man, I really didn't stop working. I literally just, like, trained anytime I could find, anytime, any chance I get. If they say we're going to the gym at 5 a.m, I'm there. And I got close to the coach and stuff like that. And they gave me, like, the key, especially my sophomore year. Like, they gave me the key to the gym. Like, we just had basically a basketball gym. We didn't have our own baseball facility. So we just basically worked out in the off season in a basketball gym. And he gave me the key. And then we just had, like, a shitty net of a top, like, hanging from the top of the roof or whatever, top of the ceiling. And then I just did long toss there all fucking day. Like, it was, again, you just had to find a way. But I had that drive because, I kind of knew that I had to work. Not, it's on me, not on anybody else. So I had to figure out how to work and how to get better so that I can compete with these motherfuckers.
If you show up on campus at USF at age 18 without 2 years of junior college, what happens?
I honestly don't think I'd have survived the fall ball, man. And even if I did, I don't think I would have that. What do you call it? It's not a fire. It's more like a. It's not quitting, dude. It's just like because you get put in such a shitty situation in JUCO. And I know a lot of JUCO kids who can appreciate this. It's just, again, we go through such a shit situation and you don't really get a whole lot. You just become tough. And whether you like it or not, you become tough.
With what you're saying, though, the shit situation that you're talking about, like, what, how do you describe that? Is it versus, like, obviously, you know, versus USF or just versus being at, you know, a decently funded NCAA school or something like that? What are you dealing with, especially like that fall ball in JUCO versus fall ball at a D1 school? What are you dealing with that you're not dealing with at a, you know, at USF?
I went to USF, and again, it's a D1, and you get treated like a D1 baseball player. In JUCO, like, for example, I have literally multiple examples. So instead, like, when I was in D1, we'll ride our charter buses or we get flown out to like go to St. John's and stuff like that. We didn't have any of that shit in JUCO. We will drive our shitty vans. We had two like shitty vans. I'm talking like shitty. And I believe we had like two or three of them. And so we will drive those motherfuckers down to Texas from Kansas. And that is a shitty, shitty drive. And the vans have really limited, like, AC and heater units. So, like, when it's fucking cold, man, it's fucking cold. When it's hot, it's hot. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you just, that's all you do. you get all packed up, jammed up in like a 10-seater fucking van, and you cramp up 14 dudes in there with all the baseball bags. You can imagine how crowded it gets. And you're literally driving 12 hours to go to Texas. You know, it's just like, it's just what it takes. And on the way, like, we'll go get our food from our cafeteria. Like, at a USF, we literally had, like, catered Chipotle from time to time. And we had great food. I still remember my JUCO, my first trip to Texas, our cafeteria prepared us our food. It gave us a little, you know, those little white plastic fucking to-go things or whatever. And there were two slices of bread, one piece of processed cheese. They forgot to put any meat in there. So it's like, it's literally two slices of bread, one piece of processed cheese, two packets of, or like a packet of mayo, and packet of a mustard, and bag of fucking Lay's.
You got the Fire Festival meal.
Literally, but it's worse because at least Fire Festival, they got meat. We didn't even get meat. And the vans will get so fucking hot sometimes, right? And the cheese will melt. And we'll call it grilled cheese without the grill. And that's how bad it was. It's just, again, but you survived through that. I literally ate that for like 10-hour drive. And, you know, in JUCO, you don't get a whole lot of post-game meals either. So, again, we'll get like catered food at USF, and we'll go to nearby McDonald's after the game, and you get $5 limit. And that's all you get. So you obviously go for the dollar menu. You can't go for the full meal. And when you get the dollar menu, you're so fucking hungry, you order 5 burgers because you don't want to waste any on the drinks. So you get $5 burgers, right? You crush them, and you get a water cup, and you fill that with Gatorade. That's what we did in JUCO. And again, it's not just our JUCO. It's just everyone. You know, all JUCO bandits across the nation were doing that. And which, again, I'm fine with that. Like, now thinking about it, that made me stronger. Then that made me who I am now. You know, and any situation I get put into, really, like, it doesn't really get worse than that, you know? So I learned to survive, really.
And how much more baseball are you playing in junior college? Because the fall in junior college, like, the fall at an NCAA institution is just, like, you get a certain amount of days of practice. Like, you might, get your scrimmages. You might get we would have a junior college come scrimmage once during the fall. But other than that, it's a long wait. And if you redshirt as a freshman, it is a long wait before you play a meaningful game. What are JUCO falls like baseball wise?
It's good baseball. And again, do you play with other teams, or you do mostly, again, inter squads, stuff like that too, because in fall ball, like, you have so many kids right in the team, and coaches are gonna make cuts at some point. So fall ball is basically where you weed out some of the weeks and you know, do all that. But and tons of games, just shit ton of practice, you know, and coaches, you usually try to hammer out on like a lot of team stuff and all that just to get ready for the season. So you would just do a lot of that. It's just, again, just a shit ton of baseball. And when I was at USF, there are rules. There are rules they got to follow. You got a certain amount of hours to practice, I believe. So we couldn't really go to the field. And we still find a way. I mean, our coach will leave a key out, and then like, it's like, hey, you don't have to take the key, but you should fucking take the key. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we kind of did our own stuff over there a little bit as well. Just to, you know, because, I mean, you can't just, like, only hit for, like, half an hour and then be call it a day. You know, that's not how it works. So still find a way. But, again, JUCO is just a shit, like, that times 10. You know, you play a shit ton of baseball, shit ton of hang out with your teammates. You basically hang out with them all day. Even when you fucking come back to the dorms, you hang out with them. So, and that, and again, surviving, really, you know, you get shit food and whatever, but you gotta make it work. And I still remember my sophomore year in JUCO, I lived in a closet. I paid $50 a month, and I lived in a closet area. So I just put up like a shitty little mattress in there, a little small fridge, and that's all I had. And I fucking survived a year there. So, and again, that made me stronger. That made me who I am now. So I honestly, 2 years in JUCO were two of the best years of my life.
So when did you start to realize, like, hey, I'm going to have some options when I leave here? I'm going to get to go to another school.
Again, when I first went to JUCO, again, I told you, like, it was a huge shock. And I was like, dude, like, I'm going to fucking, like, I'm not going to figure this out. Like, I'm going to go home or whatever. And freshman year, like, I played okay. Again, I worked my fucking ass off, and I kind of earned the sophomore year as a starting spot. And then and I kind of balled out in sophomore year, man. And we did like the first time I realized like I could probably make somewhere was probably during my sophomore year in JUCO. And we went to a sophomore showcase. They all throw that for all the sophomores to get signed or whatever. And I went and I fucking just like, I killed it. I fucking threw out a bunch of guys and I had a good RBI on the plate. And I hit a couple of shots or whatever. And then and when that sophomore showcase thing was over, I literally got like 60 offers, man, from all D1, D2, NAIA, D3, whatever. You know, like all these schools, four-year schools are loving me. That's when I kind of knew, like, oh, shit, like, you know, I could probably do something with this instead of just like, oh, you know, everyone's goal is like, oh, I want to go to a four-year and all that. But for me, it was like I think that's the thing that got me going too, was like every year for me was, it wasn't like, oh, I want to do this. It was more like, hey, like, let's dominate this year. And I think that made me farther my career. And again, after that sophomore showcase, I got shit ton of calls. Like, I still, funny story with that. I still remember my mom calling me because my cell phone bill, I was still under her cell phone plan, under a Canadian, Canadian plan or whatever. And my fucking bill was like $300-$400. She's like, what the fuck are you doing with all the calls? And I'm like, hey, like, you know, I'm getting all these calls from schools. Like, I got to talk to them. She's like, oh, shit. Good job. You know, keep doing
that. That was
it.
Back so, in the days before unlimited minutes.
This is, dude, this is like, this is way before. This is like when cell phones don't really, they never had like internet. This is when cell phones didn't have internet. This is like, you know, like you get caught and like international plans, they fuck them up just so that they can make money, right? So, and I was already getting screwed because, like, you know, I was living in Kansas on a Canadian plan and I couldn't open up a plan in the States because I didn't have like the social security numbers and all that shit. So I couldn't do any of that. So I was on that. I was still paying like extra. And then obviously when the schools called me, like, I still remember some of these schools were calling me like, dude, once a day, some of them, like it was a lot. And I was getting a shit ton of calls. I got about 60 offers and I talked to probably about 100 schools. it was overwhelming, but also it was like a good thing. Like it was like a, oh shit moment. You know, I'm like, oh, it was kind of cool.
So when you grow up in Canada and you grow up in Canada as a Korean immigrant, you probably didn't have a great grasp on like American college culture. Like, any kid growing up, you know, I could have told you exactly who USF was when I was like 14, you know,
right?
Because
right.
College football and stuff like that. How do you narrow down? What is USF the pick? Like, what did USF even mean to you before, you know, they offered you?
To be honest, like back then, like I didn't know shit about any of the schools. I was getting just a bunch of calls and offers. And so I went on to three visits. You can go to a limit of five recruiting visits. And then I went to three, and my first one was to Texas Pan America, which at the time was NAIA, turning like D2 or something like that the year after. I went over there for a visit, had a great time. I was like, hey, like, I'm going to sign. I talked to my coach, obviously, right after. They offered me a scholarship. I called my coach, like, hey, like, I want to sign here. This is awesome, because, like, they're using a nice facility, you know, four-year, like, good stuff. It was awesome, you know? And then my coach was like, oh, it's just, don't sign, wait, you got some other stuff coming. I'm like, all right, whatever. I come home, literally, like, next week, I talked to Louisiana Monroe, which was a pretty decent D1 school. They called me for a visit. I went down on a visit. Like, the field and everything was fucking beautiful. They had, like, barbecue grills set up outside of the field. Like it was incredible. Like, I've never seen anything like that. You know, when the game's going on, like, all the barbecue grills are going out. Like, it's, like, that's crazy. Like, I've never seen anything like that. And, like, they get good fans, and then school was sick. They had an indoor facility. I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. And then I call my coach. I'm like, hey, coach, I'm going to sign here. He's like, hey, no. I'm like, all right, man, I got to sign somewhere, you know, like, shit. So literally, again, the week after, USF called, got me on a visit. I go to Tampa, Florida. I was literally in Cobie, Kansas. And then next day I was in Tampa, Florida. I show up to the school. It's literally in the middle of Tampa. And the weather's beautiful, fucking, like, school's nice. It's one of the bigger schools in the States, like, across the country, you know, and it's a beautiful, like, campus, beautiful stadium, and just people everywhere. Like, it was an incredible moment. And then before I called him, I signed. And then after I called him, that coach, I signed. He's like, damn it, because he apparently had some other ones set up for me after. But I'm like, to be honest, like, I'm from a small town in Canada, Abbotsford. No one knows where the fuck that is. Now I'm in Cobie, Kansas. it really is not going to get much better than Tampa, Florida. You know, like, that was my thought at the time. So I was like, oh, fuck it. You know, I'm going to sign. And honestly, like, I'm glad I did, because USF was that was a hell of a year, you know, and it was just great experience. Great teammates. I just had a great time.
You become a Florida man.
That's right.
What was the difference in how you felt about yourself walking into USF as a new guy versus walking into Colby as a new guy? Did you starve yourself at USF as well?
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Anywhere I went, because I went to places that were so far away from home, like usually when I go to places, like no one knew who I was, you know, like, so I had to prove who I was. And that is what I had to do to survive, basically. Even coming from Korea to Canada, like no one knows who I am. Like, so I need to prove how I can play, you know? And so I did that. When I went to Colby, I got the same thing. Like, no one knows who the fuck I am. I'm just like some BC kid, you know, like no one knows who I am. I had to prove I had to play. And I did that. And when I went to USF, same thing. Like, I had to prove I had to play with these guys, you know, like, and you know, again, there's a big thing about D1 and stuff like that or whatever. But for me, it's just like, dude, like, let me prove that I belong here, you know? And it was, again, USF was the same thing. It was a huge adjustment for me. First little bit, like, I mean, there are some studs, man, and they get, obviously, the recruits are better than Colby. You know, like, the guys that get recruited to go to USF are obviously better than guys like Colby. It's just how it works, you know? Like, so USF is a way bigger school. And so guys are even out of high school that signed there, they're freshmen, they're still big and strong, and they throw hard, and they hit far and stuff like that, and that's something I had to adjust to, and I had to make it work, and I did that.
Your first series at UCF or USF, you guys go to Gainesville. You play a loaded Florida team, multiple future big leaguers on the bump.
Yes.
What's the mentality when you go into a series on paper, and it's your first series, and on paper, this team is supposed to rock you and everyone else they play that year?
The Florida's actually at the time ranked number one in the country. So we're opening our season with number one team in the country.
And the other catcher is Mike Zunino.
So yeah, at the time, let me tell you some of the guys they had. They had Preston Tucker. That was like just ridiculous. They had Mike Zunino. They also had they just had, their team was just stupid. They had
Brian Johnson was a Saturday starter. Yeah, I went back and looked at the box scores.
The Friday guy, I can't remember his name. He was a dude too. Again, the whole team was, again, literally the number one team in the nation, you know, like, and we actually had at USF, we had a really good fall ball, and fall ball at D1 is obviously a little more serious than JUCO, even though you play less games. I mean, there are still scouts and stuff like that watching you, and, you know, people are writing about you and stuff like that, you know, that you do like preseason ranks and stuff like that. And our preseason, we're ranked in number two in Big East, which is a decent conference for baseball. We had like, UConn, like Louisville, all these good schools, and we're ranked number two in the conference. So we're feeling pretty good, and we have some good dudes. And when we went to Florida, man, like our opener season, and just like we got fucking rocked, you know. So, and we showed up with high hopes too. Our coaches are like super excited. We're all super excited, and we opened our season, and these dudes just like absolutely destroyed us. I believe like the third game was like super close, but the first two games we just got fucking rocked. So. And that basically set the tone for our season, man. And unfortunately, and we try to fight through it and all that, but we really couldn't get it going. And after getting destroyed by Florida, I think we played some other schools, and we weren't like great. Like we're like a little bit under 500, you know, for winning percentage and all that. But I mean, again, it was a year to remember for me.
Yeah, you're the king of JUCO, but was it nice living that D1 life for spring? Did you miss any of those junior college stadiums?
No. It was it was life changing, and because like I told you, like I was living in a closet for $50 a month. Now I have to pay more a little, obviously, when I went to South Florida, but I'm living in, like, I show up. I still remember moving in my first day at an apartment. It was like a brand new apartment just for athletes, like students. Like mostly student athletes, but like students too. And I walk in, there's like a pool. Like I've never seen a pool, you know, like fucking just in the middle of a, like a apartment complex before. You know, I was like, what the hell is this? Like, it was like pool everywhere. Just people everywhere. Like, like places to go eat instead of going to Sonic. We went to Sonic every single day in fucking Kobe because that's all we had. And now I can go to all these places, you know, and living there was great.
So it's your junior year, you're draft eligible. Heading into the draft, what were you hearing? When did you know that it was a possibility you might not be going back to USF for your senior year?
Again, that's also another complicated story. So fall ball, like I said, is a pretty big deal at D1 or D2 or whatever. So there's scouts watching your players, you know what I'm saying? And then I was kind of like the new kid on the block, where no one knows who I am and why did they get him or whatever kind of thing. And then I go fall ball and I fucking destroyed fall ball. Like, I did really good. Like, I led the team in batting average, homers, like doubles. Like, I basically was like the best player, like best hitter on the team. And I was throwing out like everybody. I had a good arm. I've always thrown a lot of people, even in pro ball. I throw a lot of people. That's one thing I always had going. But hitting was like, hey, like if I figure it out, I'll be good or whatever. And I figured it out in that fall ball, and I fucking dominated. So like, there was a lot of hype, and I still remember coming into my lockers like, and then so when pro scouts look at you, they like you or whatever, they give you like the questionnaire for you to sign. And I signed for 25 teams. I probably signed the most questionnaires from our team with pro ball. And it was like a lot of hype, you know. It's like, holy shit, like I'm actually gonna, like I'm signing questionnaires for like big league teams, you know. Like, so I was like, this is crazy to me, you know. I'm just like small town kid from Canada and Colby, Kansas. I didn't talk to no scouts there. And I come over here, it's like a fucking, like a mind opening. Obviously I play well too, but it's like just the experience was crazy. I still remember coming to the practice and there would be like a questionnaire, like envelope left in your locker, and that's obviously a get signed, you know. And I was getting like two or three every after like game or practice or whatever. So it was really cool. And I kind of knew I was getting drafted just because, and then you start talking to scouts and stuff like that. They feed you a lot of shit. And I'm not saying they did it in a bad way, because they're all trying to sign you or whatever, but there's just so much of that bullshit that was fed to me. I was like, I didn't really enjoy the process of getting drafted. Unfortunately, that's something I still regret to this day, because I was drafted in the 27th round, like you introduced myself. And back then, like I thought I was going to go top 10 round, you know, and that was a lot of shit I was getting fed to from the scouts. And I was like, oh, well, I should go top 10 rounds just because they said it. You know, I was naive and dumb. And I didn't. And I was really, really, really pissed, you know. So I didn't want to sign. But I called my coach at USF. And he's like, hey, like, because I didn't really play all that great in the season. I played well in the fall. But, I mean, during the season, I was brutal. So he's like, I need to give another guy a chance. My backup at the time, who ended up getting drafted by the Tigers too, right after me. He was a great catcher. So he's like, I'm gonna give him a shot. So we should probably sign. I'm like, all right, well that's a done deal then, because I can't come back for my senior year and fighting for a spot. You know what I'm saying?
So it more felt like you were getting kind of forced out than making.
I definitely got jump. Forced out. Which again, it's fine, and that's how it works. And that's some things that a lot of people don't know. People think it's all like, you know, fun and games and everyone's happy or whatever, but it's not. There's a lot of that happening, and to be honest, that's how it works. Like I'm not complaining, you know. And I kind of figure the same way too. Like that's why I asked him, like, is there any spot for me to, like, is there a spot if I come back, you know? And he said basically no. And that's how college baseball works, man, where there's a lot of money involved or whatever, there's a lot of politics or what. You that's what you gotta deal with. And I guarantee a lot of kids at any schools go through that. That's why people, kids transfer and all that shit, red shirt, that's because of that, right? So, and I'm fine with that, is what it is. And I was and that was like my decision maker, and I signed with San Francisco Giants in the 27th round.
What did you sign for? What was your bonus?
I signed for $15,000 and $15,000 in school, but again, that money doesn't really count, because I mean, it's up for, like, you got to use it for them to give it to you. They don't just give you that cash, you know? So, and I ended up not going back to school. So all I got was $15,000. And after about all the taxes and shit, I got about 11 or 12 K.
When they sign you, I'm sure it says somewhere in your contract or what is something you sign, how much you're going to make. But did anyone explicitly tell you this is what your paychecks are going to look like month to month?
No, it's just you fucking go and you're like, And again, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people don't know. And now it's a little more out there, and people are a little more aware of the situation. And because, like, people talk about it, like I talk about it all the time, you know, like it's shitty, you know, but you really don't know until you go and see your first paycheck. You're like, holy fuck, you know, like, I'm
surprised you're poor.
Like, yeah, you want me to survive with this? Like, all right, well, like, I'll make it work, you know. So, but again, I went through JUCO and all that, so it wasn't a huge deal for me. But it doesn't change the fact that it was still shitty, and there's no reason for minor league professional baseball players to get paid like that. It was, again, my first paycheck, I still remember, was like $350 for 2 weeks. $350. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing for $350? So for a month, I'm making $700. That's after all the, so $1,100 was supposed to be our paycheck. And obviously, you get tax taken out and you get clubhouse dues, which is, if people don't know what that is, every team has a clubby and you pay dues for the clubby out of your own fucking paychecks. Now some teams are doing it on their own or whatever, but when I played, man, it was all us. So we had to pay taxes, clubhouse dues, and you got to tip them after too. You can't just like give them, if it's like $30, you can't just give them 30, you got to give them 40. You know, that's how the shit works. So, and that's how he's going to take care of you, or he's going to fuck you over too. So, yeah, you basically do that and you survive with like $350, which is fucking ridiculous for 2 weeks. But you find a way and you do it.
What did you make your first month tending bar after you retired?
Dude, I made like fucking $3K, over $2K my first paycheck. I was like, fuck me, what was I doing, man? Like, I should have done this a long time ago.
So most minor leaguers are essentially doing this high pressure, high stakes, mass effort job that takes you away from your family for 6, 7, 8 months of the year. And there's also the specter of, I could go 10 bar and make three times as much money at least.
Exactly. And the point is, there's no reason for that to happen. The only reason that's happening, because owners are cheap. And that is the only reason it's happening. And it is bullshit. It's just utter bullshit. So this is a perfect example I can give you. My first full season, I go through spring training, which is in March. And I go actually a little bit earlier because I was a catcher. And then usually catchers get recorded a little bit earlier to catch like pens and shit like that. So I went there a little bit earlier, like mid-February. And then I was catching some like rehabbers and shit like that. And spring training, and by that time I wasn't getting paid. They just basically sent me out with a hotel, and I was fine with that because that's what you get. And during spring training, you don't get paid. That's a month. You just get a little money. And after the month, I didn't make the team. I got stuck in extended. If people don't know what extended is, it's basically all the players that didn't make the full season roster, like low A, high A, double A, triple A, you get stuck in extended. And when you get stuck in extended, it's basically an extended version of spring training. And you basically play games on your own or against other teams that are also in extended. And you do that without getting paid. And that's until that happens. That goes on until the draft, which is in June. So from April till mid-June or early June, you do extended and you don't get paid. So that's like, what, three and a half months, or I guess 2.5 months on its own, and another month of spring training, that's 3.5 months of not getting paid. And then the draft happens and you start short season. And that's when you get your first paycheck. And my first paycheck, again, it was $1,100 total. You divide it by two. It was like $550, right? And after taxes and dues and shit like that, you get about, again, $350 to $400 per paycheck. And you do that, you get that for 2.5 months. So I made about about $2,000 for the entire year. And I come back so after that rookie ball, I get sent home, and they bring me straight down to instructional camp, which is another month-long camp, kind of like spring training after the season, for dudes to get more work in, or if they want you to work on something, they'll bring you in, or if, you know, whatever. So I got invited for the instructional camp and did it for a month without getting paid again, just meal money, and you get sent home. So you do about what, 6 or 7 months of that was not getting paid a whole lot. So the entire year I made about a little over $2,000. So it was it was the most ridiculous thing. If I think now, like, that's why I don't get it, you guys. There's no reason for it to be that way. But just because it has been that way, it's still that way. So it doesn't need to change.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, and think about how many hours a week that minor leagues work, because it's not just the game. You're at the stadium hours and hours before the game, plus the travel.
Right. People don't realize you get paid for 3 hours, which is how long the game's last. No, motherfucker. If there's a game at 7 p.m., we're showing up at 2, you know, sometimes 1:30. You know, and then you stay there, you show up at 1:30 or 2, and you stay until the end of the game, which is 11, and sometimes longer. And you get a shower and all that. You get home by midnight, you know, and you wake up and do it all over again. And you do that for 162 games, obviously, in the big leagues, 144 in the minors. Like, that's a shit ton of fucking games. And that's a lot of work. And spring training, you have to wake up at 6:30, and you show up early, and you don't get done until like 4 or 5 p.m. You know, like, so people think you only should get paid for that plane. No, like, you don't know the whole preparation that we do, you know, taking BP, fucking infield, outfield, like all that shit. Like, it takes a long time for you to prep and throwing bullpens and all that. And the game happens. Game itself is pretty long. And so it's not all day. It's a full time. It's more than a full time job.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So you sign, you get sent out to the AZL for a few games, and then your next season, like you said, you're an extended, and then you start short season. You start short season in the complex league. On this show, it has typically been me asking warm weather state guys who had to go somewhere like the Midwest League, you know, like what's it like adjusting to Beloit or something like that. If you grew up in Texas, you're from Canada, you spent 2 years in Kansas. Yeah. And then you spent a spring in Florida. But what is summer like in Arizona for the first time when you're catching?
Through summer, this is the easiest story I can tell you about how fucking hot it is. Like you said, I'm a catcher, and so you wear gear. I remember I was catching one time. Our trainer, because it was so fucking hot, our trainer, just for fun, left a thermometer or right on the home plate. It got up to 120, and so he's like, what the fuck? We shouldn't even play. But we had to play, obviously. We're not just going to not play. And I still remember I caught the game, full game. I lost about 7 pounds in water right after the game, because they make you weigh in and weigh out after the game, just so that, like, they can track or whatever. And after the game, I got back my fucking shin guard. You know, like, shin guards kind of made of like a little bit of like metal and all that stuff, and plastic and metal. And the plastic melted. Fucking so the shin guards, like, I don't know if you like, so like in between, it's like a caterpillar, so it kind of moves like a little bit. Like, that thing was stuck because the fucking plastic part melted together. And that's fucking how hot it was, man. And like, it was ridiculous. It was so fucking hot. And again, you just have to deal with it. So I lose 7 pounds of water on the way home, or on the way back to the hotel. I'm cramping fucking everywhere. And you drink Pedialyte until you fucking piss green. And then fucking you do it all over again the next day. So it was honestly one of the bigger adjustments I had to make.
Well, have you ever hit better in your life than you did in 2011 in the AZL?
No, it's the best year of my life. I don't know what it was, man. Like, I was hitting like 270, like, even until like June or what, or like, no, sorry, even until like July, because like season starts in June and July, even like until like mid-July, I was hitting 270 or something. Dude, I don't know what the fuck happened. I fucking went on a tear, and I ended up hitting 350, led the organization in hitting, and obviously, like, it's short season, so it's a little bit less, you know, example, like, less than full season guys or whatever, you know, but I hit 350. I led the entire organization in hitting, and I hit 6 homers, and I hit 4 in, like, the last month. I just went on a fucking crazy tear, man. So I ended up hitting, like, 350 with 6 dingers, and I threw out everybody. that was the best year playing baseball, like, ever. Like, balling out, like, that was by far the best year.
What's the toughest thing about the jump to full season ball and getting out of the complex and going somewhere?
It's an adjustment, but when you break with a team, though, it's usually an excitement because you don't have to get stuck and extended. I still remember when I first made to Augusta, which is a low-weight team, after the short season, and I was like, I was super fucking pumped, you know, and there's a lot of excitement. And But Augusta, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was fucking, it gets hot as shit up there too, but it's like with humidity. This is Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah, so Georgia's gross.
Dude, it was fucking miserable. I didn't know that my first year. And I show up like, oh, dude, I'd rather do this than, you know, AZ. Like I was 120. It was brutal. And I show up. It got so fucking hot. Like you literally, like I wake up, shower, right, in the apartment. As soon as I walk out the door, I literally had to shower again because I'm like sweating. Dude, it was the most crazy thing ever. Like and that itself was a fucking adjustment, dude. Like I'm losing literally like another 7 pounds of water just because of the humidity. You know, humidity was gross. You know, and you get a bunch of bugs and shit like that during the game. So it's not a pleasant way to play baseball, you know. But again, you kind of have to deal with it.
And with no money, how are you keeping yourself in shape? How are you keeping yourself fed?
You find a way, man. And in low A and double A with the Giants, again, every organization is a little bit different. They didn't pay for living. So you have to get your own apartment. So we're sharing two or three bedroom apartment with two bathroom with like seven dudes. And it got fucking gross. But you have to because we can't afford to pay $600 for rent. We can't do that per person. Like it's impossible. We can't do that. So we'll split up for seven people and I'll pay like 200, a little over 200 for a living. And you just have to do that because you get paid like shit and you got to pay for fucking living. And now I heard that some of the teams are taking care of it because people are like, what the fuck, you know, but yeah, it was nasty and you get no money. So basically your first paycheck goes to rent and groceries. And your second paycheck, basically, you survive for, you know, like for more groceries or whatever, you know. So I don't even know, man. I don't know how to explain. It was just shitty. It was just no, I can't explain other than that it was shitty. Like if someone came out to me like, hey, here's a professional contract, you need to go to low A, I'll tell the fuck off because I'm not doing that again.
How does that affect your mental well-being? Like, how do you feel about yourself that, yeah, you're chasing this dream and stuff, but you're not being treated like a real employee.
I think the worst part for me was you become numb to that kind of stuff. You know, some of the things that regular employees would be like, what the fuck? Or they like sue the company or whatever. Like we're just like so numb to it. And that's something I hated that I was like, oh yeah, you get a, so minor leaguers usually get abused as in playing time or if there's politics or going up and down. You see a lot of guys getting fucked over, like the big league, like a young big leaguers that's supposed to be, that should be in the big leagues. They dominate in the minor leagues. And they keep them down in the minor league just for the, like the fucking, like the
playing service time.
Service time, sorry. Yeah. So it's just like, and there's not just, it's not just happening in the big leagues and the minor leagues level. It's happening within the minor league levels as well. If you're a low A guy, you fucking dominated. But just because you're a low round pick, you're gonna get fucking, you're gonna get fucked again. You're gonna go and do it. I still remember one of my buddies was a Triple A All Star. He won the hitting title in Triple A, and they sent him down to High A. They demoted him two levels after doing that just because he's a nobody. He's a fucking he wasn't a high draft pick or nothing like that, right? So and you see that everywhere and all that shit and plus the pay and the how you get treated and it's just bullshit, man. It's horrible. And honestly, like I do not miss playing professional baseball because why would I miss it? Like I made zero, like I literally lost money. I spent all my signing bonus within the first 2-3 years. Of professional baseball. I played 6 years. So I was basically working every offseason to save up for the season because with that salary that you get during the season, you can't afford shit. So yeah, you just learn to survive, man.
Your first year in full season ball, you get hurt. Second year, you're just really not hitting. You don't have to rake to make it in the show as a catcher, but you have to hit a little bit. Yeah. Pre-game BP, hacks in the cage. Like, what are you doing each day? What's the play for this? How do you say, like, okay, I'm going to survive. I'm going to figure out how to hit. What are you, like, what are the adjustments you're making?
And that's the thing with, so people are like, oh, you know, this guy hit 270 in the year, you know, like whatever. But even within that 270 hitting year, that player goes through a lot of mental state changes, adjustments, even like the trying different shit, you know, and a lot of that happens, and that happens with everybody. And I simply could not figure it out for a full year. And I figured it out from like short stints or whatever. But when you're playing professional baseball, you're playing a lot of games. You got to be more consistent. And I wasn't doing that. So, and honestly, like I tried everything I could, you know, even hitting, like I'll try a leg kick, no leg kick, you know, hands back, hands forward, hands in. And sometimes you have a coordinator is coming down. They're like, oh, tell you to do this and you do that. And then next week your hitting coach is telling you some other shit. So you do that. And then, again, it's a whole trying to figure it out. Just, again, trying to survive, trying to figure it out. And I simply didn't do that hitting wise. So that's, yeah, that was basically my career.
Yeah, the hitting never comes around, but you do end your career as a career 500 hitter in AAA, which not many,
that's pretty badass.
Not yeah, many can guys say, can say.
I can say that till I die, which is fucking tight.
Walk me through getting turned into a pitcher.
Dude, I got stories for days, man. Fucking, that's also a funny story here. My pitching coach at the time, so I was in low A, and I was 24. I was old in double A. I'm backing up. And when you're backing up in anywhere, like, you don't want to do that in the minors. So, for example, you rather want to be a starter in low A than to be a backup in high A. Does that make sense? So I still remember one time I was in low A. I got promoted to high A, but it was more of a demotion for me because I was going from a starting catcher in low A to a backup in high A. So anyways, you don't want to be a backup is basically what I'm saying. And I was a backup. I was 24 in low A, and I was miserable. And my pitching coach at the time, Steve Klein, pitched in the big leagues for the Cardinals for a while. And he's like, hey, just come throw a bullpen for me. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that shit. I'd rather like fucking quit than do that. Just because I had so much pride in catching. And I've caught all my life. I literally did not play any other position but to catch. Like, I caught all my life. You know, that's all I've done. You know, and he's like, just do it, whatever. Like, who cares? So I was like, all right, whatever. Fuck, I don't care. I'm not playing anyway. So I go to a bullpen, throw a bullpen for him, just basically all fastballs. I don't know how to throw any other pitches. Just throw all fastballs. And that's all I know. So I did that. Again, I had a pretty good arm behind the plate. So I was like, that's pretty good. You're going to pitch in 3 days. I'm like, what? Like, I've never pitched in my life. You're going to put me in front of fucking pro baseball players? He's like, yeah. I'm like, fuck it, let's go, let's do it. So he puts me in against Charleston, which is a low A team for the Yankees. And I don't know if you know anything about the Yankees. The Yankees minor league system are always fucking loaded with talent because they have a lot of money. And so here's a funny story about that story. You know, so our low A team, our entire signing bonus for the entire team was about like $500,000. We're like a couple, like, you know, 200,000 or 200,000 signs and a bunch of fucking nobodies like me. So it was about $500,000, a little over. Their entire, like, just their lineup signed for $10 million. That's when they had, like, Gary Sanchez and all that bullshit too. And I played against like Aaron Judge and all those guys, right? And I'm pitching and I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm facing these basically big leaguers now, you know? So I was like, what the hell? I go actually throw pretty well, like three up, three down. I threw strikes, just like whatever, a couple pop-ups and like a strikeout or some shit. And then on the gun, I hit like 92 or 93. And then a pitching coach is like, oh, well, you're going to come back. That was basically at the end of the season. So there he's like, come back to instructional camp, my fucking fourth instructional camp, which sucks, but whatever, and come back ready to be a pitcher. I'm like, fuck it. All right. And that's basically how I became a pitcher, man.
So do you think that was your ticket? Like, did you have a lot of optimism about that? Or was it like, I got to do what I got to do to keep my jersey?
I mean, that was my only choice. It was basically pitch or get the fuck out. So I of course I'm going to try it. Like, I don't want to be done right now because I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. I'm 24, 25, 20, 25. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. Like, I have no education, you know, I got none of that shit. So yeah, I might as well do it and try to see if this works, you know. So
you head to short season that next year. Your stats are good. You're old as hell, but your stats are good. But some guys get the tough walk into the manager's office. That scene from Bull Durham where they cut the guy loose. They don't even give you that. You get walk me through getting cut on a phone call.
Yeah, that also pretty tight story. I pitched well, but I know how baseball works. I know how Pro Bowl works. I was a catcher. I caught all these fucking pitchers. I was a right-handed reliever. I was 25 at the time. I was a right-handed reliever, 25-year-old, pretty old, and I'm throwing 92, 94. That just simply ain't going to cut it. That's just not how Pro Bowl works. So doesn't matter what kind of stats you put up. And that was my first year pitching. And for a guy that's never pitched before, I say that's pretty good. You know, I put up a 2.5 ERA, and I struck out like 32 innings, like give up not many very hits. Like it was at a good year for a 20-year-old, you know. But for a 25-year-old right-handed reliever, that just wasn't enough. And I simply wasn't throwing hard enough. You know, or I had to put up like a 1 ERA, you know what I'm saying? Like, so, and that didn't happen. And I went home after the season. And I obviously, that's not something you expect. You don't expect to get cut because everyone has that confidence. But at the time, like when I got the call, like it didn't surprise me. They called me, you know, I was old, throwing not very hard and just not, that's not how Pro Bowl works. So I get a call in the off season, right? So it's like November. I still remember that day. It was like November 11th or some shit. I'm sleeping. I get a call. And like it's like 9 or 10 in the morning. I try to get up, see it. It's like San Francisco number. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and I like, I don't answer it because like it's a weird number. Like I'm out of shit. I don't get a San Francisco number. If anything, I'll get Arizona numbers. I get a call. Like, I'm like not answer. And then I try to go back to sleep. And then like it hit. You know, my mind's like, oh, fuck, that was it, wasn't it, you know? And literally 2 seconds later, called again. I answer. It's a very quick call. I don't know if any people got released before, if any minor leaguers watching this or hearing this. Yeah, it's a very quick call. They all say the same shit when they release you. It's like, hey, we enjoyed having you. We just got no roster spot for you, and good luck. That's basically it. People think it's like this elaborate, you know, because I was there for 6 years, man. I know a lot of people in the Giants organization, you know, and maybe, you know, a little more than a literally 3-5 minute talk. But that was basically it, man. Quick, literally the quickest phone call of my life. And my heart obviously sank. Like, I mean, when you get released, doesn't matter if you expect it or not, or you kind of figured like it didn't surprise you or whatever. It still fucking sucks, you know, so. I got a call, and then I asked him. So I remember Shane Turner called me. He's like the minor league coordinator at the time. And then he's like, there's just no room for you, whatever. I'm like really? Like, and I actually said, like, dude, I put up I did decent. You don't see anything? You don't see any future? He's like, no. I'm like, sick. Good talk. And then right after, I asked to see, like, if, you know, like, so they're like, hey, your information is going to get released. You're released. And, you know, other teams can pick you up or whatnot. And I'm like, hey, like, you got any, like, indie ball contests or whatever? He's like, yeah, I know a few teams. And that was it. Like, he didn't even give me the team names.
Didn't give you any contacts.
I'm like, hey, like, can you give me some, like, he's like, yeah. And it's like, nothing. I'm like, sick. That's, again, I left on a pretty sour note. And again, it is what it is. I'm not the only one that's deal with this. I know some of the other guys got fucked way more than me. And at least this happened during the off season. You know, I know some guys, I've been there for 6 years, like 5 spring trainings, and when they get released during spring training, it's tough, man. I've seen dudes cry in the lockers and shit like that because you're with your boys and it's a lot of emotions. You just got canned and you're basically everything you work for just ended just there, you know. So, and I've dealt with that before, and it's just shitty situation. But when you do it on a call, it's just like, fuck, you know, like, I don't got to talk to nobody. You know, like, I don't got to cry in front of my teammates or nothing. So it's just like, fuck, this fucking sucks. And that's basically it. And then as soon as I call my best friend. And then I'm like, hey, like, fuck this shit. Let's get better. And I was training at Driveline at the time, which is in Seattle. And we drove to Seattle right then, right, that day I went down there and started training, just because, like, I knew I could get more out of my training. I knew I could get better as a pitcher, and getting released by Giants was not going to stop me. And so I ended up doing that, and I ended up signing with an indie ball team called Winnipeg Gold Eye for a little bit, and
home of Reggie Abercrombie, American Association legend.
Dude, the legend, the fucking legend. I'll play with him, man.
Dream guest for this podcast, Reggie Abercrombie.
No shit. I'll let him know. I talked to him from time to time, actually. So I'll definitely let him know. He's a legend, and it was great. I had a good time. And in Indie Ball, I just had a different experience because I knew my ticket out of Indie Ball was to throw gas. And I literally had to blow 97 to 100. And I knew that. And that's how you get signed. So fucking, I tried doing that. I hit 97, you know, which was cool. But I also walked like 9 dudes, you know, like 5 innings. And I got canned fucking after 5 innings or whatever, like a month into the season. I got released. And then, yeah, fucking that was my career, man.
So you hang it up. You move on to life after organized baseball, after playing professional right. baseball. You start managing bar. Doing that thing. My last game in college, and I think I've told this story in this podcast before, I cried for two reasons. One, I'm just a huge crier. It's just a big part of my personality. Love a good cry. Love a good Pixar movie, just sobbing it out. Two, I knew it was the last time I was going to play baseball and like really going to compete. Because like there's alumni right. games, there's men's league if you're into that.
But yeah, it's not the same.
I knew that... When organized baseball leaves you behind, you're pretty much done competing. However,
yeah,
what you have done and what everyone has seen on social media, why I reached out, the main reason I reached out, you have turned baseball into like a competitive recreational sport, kind of in the way a lot of people approach golf, mm-hmm. just right, with more right. smelling salts, competing yeah. against yourself. Like it's like you're out there trying to shoot a low score. But it's, mm-hmm. how and why did you bring baseball back into your life in this way when you're training essentially for a game that is not going to come? Like it's not, you're not trying to get picked up by the Giants to go throw in the bullpen this year.
Right, right, right.
How did you bring, like, what was the genesis of this? Why have you been doing this? And because for people unfamiliar with Eric's social media, I mean, it is, you're trying to throw gas. That's what you're trying yeah. to do. You're trying to throw gas yeah. and hit long drives, which as a mm-hmm. short, as a very low distance golfer, I admire that.
yeah, the whole thing started with basically, I'm sure you've been through this too after playing, because we play baseball all of our lives, right? And that's basically only thing you, that's what your life is surrounded by is playing
it's
baseball,
your identity
right
I'm a baseball player
you're exactly and when that's taken away from you and there's like the emptiness. I'm sure you could agree with this too, and I'm sure a lot of guys that hung up their cleats can feel this too. It doesn't matter if you play like slow pitch or whatever, which are I think that are great, you know, recreational sports, you can do that, but the emptiness that you get after especially me after playing professional baseball, like it was a lot, you know, like it was like holy, like I'm like I was pretty miserable in life, like I was miserable mentally, even though like the only thing that kept me going was because I got in, jumped into a bar business. That's something I've never done before, so I had to like in the beginning I had to like learn, you know, like, and you know that, you know how fucking busy I was, like I'm like trying to learn this completely different business, and I'm a bar manager, so I need to figure a bunch of shit out, you know, like I need to make it work. And so I was doing that. So I was busy, but when that slowly I got used to it or whatever, that emptiness really started to creep in. I was like, you know, what am I doing? You know, like baseball, like what happened? Like you start regretting like, oh, why did I do it then? Or whatever. And I just got tired of that. I just kind of got tired of it is basically what I can say. And one day out of just like, for my sake, for my fucking around, whatever, I went to a local park. I already had a baseball, and I had a thing called pocket radar, which is like a portable radar gun. And I went out there, just literally went to a local, like a fucking little league park, man, against, you know, the home plate fence or whatever. I was throwing, and I threw 77, you know, and I was like, looked at it, and it was like, my arm was hurting bad. I didn't do shit for 3 years. Like, I literally did nothing. And my weight, like I was 6'2", like 240, my playing weight, and I got to 290. You know, I'm obviously this is a different lifestyle, right? Like I'm a bar manager, like I'm not working out, like I'm not forced to work out, you know, I don't have to throw, hit or whatever. And I just got fat as shit. And then I went and did that through 77. And I still remember I'm just like so like mad and like, and you know, all of us have that competitiveness. Like we all have that. And that's how we succeed in baseball. And my competitiveness like kicked in, man. And I'm like, fuck this. Like, I'm not gonna, like, this is not me. You know what I'm saying? Like, so ever since then, man, I started training. I trained like literally on my own in a small town in Canada. No one around me played baseball, or I knew anyone if I played baseball, and then a bunch of kids. And I really wasn't going to train with them because I'm not trying to train with somebody that's not at my level. And I'm not trying to sound like a dick or anything, but that's just the way I, like, I'm like, hey, I need to surround myself with like enough drive, someone who has with enough drive, and there's no one. So I'm fine with training myself, and I put myself in a situation so that I had to get better. And my competitiveness, I'm very competitive when it comes to that kind of shit, and I will compete. I don't care if it's by myself or with other people, with tens of people. I don't care. I'll do it, you know? So, and yeah, I started training right away. And while I was doing that, I was posting stuff on social media just for fun. Like, I don't care how many people like it or see it or whatever. Like, I'll do it. I don't care. I'll go to some local park. I'll throw. And I was doing that, and my social media kept getting bigger and bigger. And here I am now, you know?
So is there like an end goal? Like, is there somewhere you want to get with what you're doing? And I'm not saying, again, like, not like, you've made it clear you are not trying to play pro baseball again.
Right.
But when you go out there every day and you're training, what's the goal? Like, where are you taking this?
I actually get a lot of this question, and a lot of people ask me, oh, are you like, if you hit 100 or whatever, you know, like, are you going to play again? Or like, what are you trying to do? Like, and I get that asked a lot, and I've thought about this too. And I don't need a reason to do it. And that's where I stand now. It's just like, I enjoy doing it. I enjoy throwing. I love it. I fucking love throwing. Whether I suck or not, I fucking love throwing. I enjoy hitting. Like, I love hitting tanks. I love hitting as hard as I can off a tee or whatever I can find, I'll do it. I enjoy long drive stuff and golf. Like, I don't care about golf. I'm a terrible golfer. I don't care. But I like hitting things far, so I'm going to do that. And I like lifting heavy shit, and so I'm going to do that. So what I'm saying is, now I'm at the point now, it's just like, I want to, and this is how I reward myself, is by doing the shit that I enjoy doing. And from doing this, I've been training on my own, and plus now here with other people that are more likely in the pro ball and stuff like that. I've been doing this for a little over 2 years now, I think. And honestly, man, like, I'm having the most fun I've ever had, and I've never liked baseball more than I do now. So it's really not like an end goal, or I need to like make it big, or I need to fucking do this, that, or any of that bullshit. Like, I am very, very happy with what I'm doing now, and I do it because I enjoy doing it. Fuck what other people say. No one tells me to go lift. No one tells me to go throw. Dude, I could fucking go on vacation right now for 2 weeks. No one's gonna say shit. But that's not me. You know what I'm saying? That for me, to make me happy, I need to go throw, compete, hit, golf, whatever, like, try different things. And I like meeting new people. Like, I get to do that by doing what I'm doing now. I'm like a content creator type stuff, and I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing, you know, but I enjoy doing it, so I will continue doing it, whether, you know, like, my you know, content, you know, people like it or whatever. No, like, I don't care. I made a post about this before too. Like, to be honest, like, I don't care. Like, I don't fucking care what you think of me, you know. That's something that is very different from when I was playing baseball, like, professionally until now. Like, I really don't give a shit. And to be honest, like, I'm way happier now, so I'm going to keep doing this.
Eric, this is a question I ask everyone on this podcast.
Okay.
What do you wish you would have known in retrospect before signing? If you could sit down with your, I'll use your word, with your jabroni 21-year-old self, just signed, you don't know anything about pro ball, what are you telling that kid?
To be honest, I think I'll just tell him to enjoy the ride, man. Like, and sometimes a lot of us, especially when you get to a certain level, it kind of becomes work, if you know what I'm saying. Like, it's almost like robotic, right? It's like, oh fuck, I have I have to get a hit. You know, like I have to do this. I have to. And I've been there. I've done that. And if I could go back and tell my fucking 20-year-old ass, I'm like, hey, enjoy this fucking ride. You got fucking drafted. You know, that's cool. And you're in professional baseball. It sucks, but make the most of it. You know, like, and just enjoy the whole, and just like learn, enjoy, observe, like the whole emotions. Like I wish I could tell him that, because for me, like when I was struggling, or when I told you when I got drafted, I didn't enjoy it. I almost like didn't sign because I hated. Like when I got the call to got drafted at 27th round, I was not happy. I was pissed, and it shouldn't be like that. You know what I'm saying? I should have enjoyed the whole situation. The fact that I got drafted, how cool is that? Like I should have enjoyed it. You know, and the fact that you're in the pro ball, like I should have enjoyed it a little more, rather so than I'm being so miserable at times. And I was miserable because I took it so serious, right? When you take things really serious, it just, and when it doesn't plan out the way you think, like you become miserable. And I was letting that affect me. And that's something I wish I could tell to my old self. I'm like, hey, just fuck everybody. Enjoy the ride. Fuck it. You know, so.
I've got a quick rapid fire for you, and then I'll let you get out of here.
All right.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
Favorite? Charleston. Charleston, Yankees low A. Fucking beautiful field and great crowd. Fucking, yeah, it was great.
Favorite college ballpark?
Florida. I mean, it sucked that we had to play there, but it was great. I was, they do this thing called Gator Bait. And then so, and I was like one of the hitters or whatever. Every time I come to bed, they're like, 5,000 people, Gator Bait, and they do this like a hand thing, you know. I was like, this is cool, you know. It was great.
Best pitcher you ever faced in an organized game? I'm gonna do the caveat because you recently faced Bauer in a cage.
No, it was Ken Giles by far. I faced Ken Giles in Double A. He threw 102 with a 92 mile an hour slider, and I literally walked in there. I'm like, dude, what the fuck is this? And I came and I like laughed. And then catch a laugh, too, because he knew it was like this good video game shit. So Ken Giles, by far, the best pitcher I ever faced.
Best hitter you ever faced on the bump?
On the probably, what's his name for the fucking Braves, man? Why can I not think of names today? Shortstop, you know what I'm talking about? Fuck.
Andrelton Simmons?
No.
Oh, Dansby Swanson?
Dansby, yeah. Dansby. I faced him in a short season, my first my first season, really. I faced Dansby Swanson, and he was like the top round pick from Vandy. Like, he was a dude, and I faced him. He went 1-for-2 against me with a broken bat single, so I'll take that all day.
Yeah, for sure. Worst bus ride story, and this could be minor leagues or JUCO.
Probably Augusta when I was in low A. Went from Augusta to Hagerstown, somewhere really far, like 12-hour drive. And then we're coming back actually to Augusta, and it was like miserable drive. It was like so hot and gross, and it's like it was just miserable. And my manager at the time, he was awesome. He's like, we're all stopping at the gas station, we're buying as many beers as we can. I'm like, all right, sick. So we did that. On the way back, we literally drank all the beers, and then we were counting. You know that song? It's like 99 beers, like, you know, like a song, like you go from
99 bottles of beer.
Yeah. We sang the song three times, like all the way from 99 to 1 to, or 0 to 99, like three times, and we're home. We had a 12-hour drive. And it was miserable because the next day, like, I couldn't even walk. Like, I was still drunk when I showed up to the field. That was great.
Okay, this is a two-parter. What is a Korean food that everyone in America needs to try? And have you found a great Korean joint in America?
I haven't really found one yet. And actually, I can make it at home. Like, my mom actually makes like bomb Korean food. Like, so I can't really, it doesn't get any better than that, but I can still cook it. And I've been doing that. But this Korean barbecue, man, like it's very, I think people know now that it's delicious, but you gotta get like, yeah, Korean barbecue, man, you can't beat that. Like the pork belly, like pork belly is one of my favorites. Like you, I can crush that all day. And like beef rib, like brisket, like just Korean barbecue is fire.
But you're saying like finding the authentic, because like the Korean barbecue sauce at my local wings joint is probably not what you're talking about.
That's what I'm saying. So you got to find like an actual like a Korean barbecue restaurant, but even within those, there's only so many good ones, you know what I'm saying? And those fusion ones are not it. I'm talking like old school Korean barbecue joint, man. If you find one, like, you're lucky, because that shit's bomb.
Would you rather hit a dinger or throw someone out at second?
This is... if you said rather hit a dinger or strike someone out, I'd definitely say hit a dinger. But throwing people out was my favorite thing to do on the field, so I'm going to pick that. I threw out a lot of people, and that was one of my strengths, and I enjoyed doing it. I also like enjoyed backpicking a lot. I backpicked like a shit ton of dudes in pro ball, and every time, dude, I'll pimp the shit out of it. Like, I'll start running back to the tank. That was great.
This is also a question. The last one I've got for you is also about throwing people out. Who is the drunkest person you've had to throw out of a bar?
I've had dudes puke on me. I've had dudes like doing drugs on the patio. I think I've seen some shit, man. Like, in the bathroom, I still remember with like some dude like doing some crazy shit in the bathroom. I had to literally go in there and kick him out. But they had to follow me because I'm literally the biggest one in the bar, you know. But it was so soft. It was like horrible, you know. It's like, but it's part of the job, right? So fuck it.
Yeah, we'll save those stories for the bar managers podcast. Right. Eric, Sam, right. Thanks so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm. Tell the folks again where they could follow you.
Appreciate that, man. And yeah, you can follow me at King of JUCO on Twitter, eSim3400 on Instagram and TikTok or TikTok. I don't fuck whatever. YouTube, you can follow me at Eric Sim.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks a lot, man. Thank you.
And that's it for today's episode from Phenom of the Farm. Huge thanks to Eric Sim for stopping by. If you enjoyed Eric on this podcast, there is a lot more where that came from. Go follow him at King of JUCO. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate on Apple Podcast, and leave a review. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all your amateur and prospect news. And we'll check back in 2 weeks with current USF assistant coach and former Florida ace Carson Whitson.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.